Queen's Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Go
fuck yourself. And I am a sports entertainer.
Ladies, gentlemen, MBs. Holy shit. What's going on? This is the Eat, Sleep, Believe, Repeat podcast. Here we lead. I'm here. I just ate the mic. All right. I am the Duke of Drip, also known as Bane Duke, also known as the Digital Phantom. Jesus Christ, fucking that hit fucking killed me. Holy fuck.
That's how you know we're ready.
Headshot.
Anyway, so yeah, it's a fucking Tuesday. I almost called it a Monday. Fuck. It's fucking Clay Laxley Tuesday, baby. Here's my question, Charlie. We did a poll last week. Let's just talk about it now. I'm not going to get the next poll just yet. I'll like as it comes to me. But we did a poll last week. Do we think Ricky Starks has wrestled his last match in AEW? And the results were a resounding yes.
Yeah.
Get some good action on that poll, too. Yeah, got to get some good action on that. So that's good. So
thanks,
guys,
everyone,
make sure
for hopping in on that. It's cool to see that feedback.
So if Ricky Starks does leave AEW, do we then elect a new pillar? I understand the argument could be made, well, he's our pillar anyway, so whether he's in AEW, WWE, the problem is, as much as we like him, we really like other guys that have gone to WWE, and we don't follow them. I don't follow Cody anymore. I don't care what happens with him. He won the title. That's what I gave a shit about. You know what I mean? Now, if Cody was facing against somebody, like, I don't know, do we know who his opponent's going to be at the next big pay-per-view?
I should know that. See, AJ Styles.
Opponent tells you.
Running back again.
What, Roman?
AJ Styles. I think they're running back
AJ.
With him again.
I mean, that's not a bad decision to have him face AJ a couple. I'm sure they'll...
I've thought about this before.
I'm sure they put up a great match the first time they put up against each other, because you know AJ loves to deliver, even at fucking 75 years old, you know, against everybody, so...
And they dropped five stars.
People give shit for AJ Styles being, well, I bet if I went watched any old AJ Styles match, I would still enjoy it, because it's fucking AJ Styles. And even if he can only move like a fucking sack of potatoes, I bet he still at least can sell like a fish, you know, like, so, I don't know, but probably just not hitting as many springboards anymore, so everyone just fucking starts getting mad because he's not doing 700 flips a match, you know?
He's got a little bit more of a brawler in him now. A little brawler.
He had that in him. Maybe just New Japan stuff. That's what he was doing.
He's fully embraced that style now, and it's working for him.
I think. I feel like Orton went through a similar transition at a similar age.
But I've thought about this before with the pillars, and what I think we should do is if one of them leaves. I mean, we just had Wheeler Yuta gone for 6 months, literally, and he's finally back.
Yeah.
If one of them leaves, I think we shatter the fucking system and we start from anew.
We just do four pillars? Okay,
yeah,
I'm down with that.
We can bring in people from
the old one suggestion? Because he never really, it feels like, got off the ground, can we keep Daniel?
I was just about to say, I feel like if we want to elect someone to re-continue in our new ones, he's the perfect example.
Yeah,
because
he just never really got there. And that's not his fault.
He'd be the one
I'd pick. Never really got there. Because everyone else got their opportunities, I feel like. Won titles, was a main event star. I mean, shit, Wheeler came back to one of the biggest pops I've heard for a fucking guy. I mean, think about that. A year ago, he was in the biggest faction in the company, and nobody really cared. He came back to a fucking massive pop this week.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's, to me, everyone else got there. And again, that's no offense against Daniel. He's just been in a tough spot for a couple of years. You know what I mean? Like, so, yeah, okay. I like that. So, maybe we've talked about doing our Pillars podcast. I think we now have our excuse to do it. If we find out that Ricky Starks is leaving AEW, we have a new episode of podcast coming out that you guys will have to look forward to. Our Pillars of Chaos, or whatever we're going to call it, you know?
The
forging of new pillars. That'll be the name of the episode. But yeah, anyway, so let's actually get into the show, Charlie. We got some stuff to talk about this week. Season 4, Episode 3 of ESE. We got some Contract Mania stuff. MJF is back in AEW. And we got some world title matches, or we got a world title match, I should say, on Dynamite this week. Collision's been incredible again. Ring of Honor, not terrible. It wasn't awful. Our normal order of business to take care of. And, you know, okay, so this week is going to be a little bit fascinating. So we're going to have, if you're fans of our content, you're going to fucking eat this week. Because we have started a new podcast. For those of you that don't know, it's called Eat, Sleep, Elite Fantasy. It's on all of your private podcast platforms. You can search it up by that. You can also find it, I believe, in our link tree, correct, Charlie? I believe it's been added in there. So if you go to ESE at Eat, Sleep, Elite on Twitter, which is also where you can find us. Matt Bainduke, that's BANEDUKE at O'Charlie with an X instead of an A. You can find us in all those places. But also, we just started a new podcast about fantasy stuff, and we just posted our first episodes, or I should say our first episode. Well, okay, we posted our first two episodes, our introduction, so that's always a good starting point for the podcast. And what's actually kind of great about that now is that, like, when we only have like less than 10 episodes, there's absolutely no reason why, even if we had like 4 episodes right now, you couldn't watch that introduction and then just check the other stuff out. That's going to be pretty nice for a while, because it's going to almost be like, okay, there's the intro. Now I'm going to listen to what they actually have to say about these things, right? And I actually think that's one of the best podcasts we have ever produced. And it's like 2 hours long. I think you would agree, Charlie. It's a great show.
By far the most passion-filled show we've ever had.
So definitely check that one out if you haven't already. And make sure you check that show out. We have our Acolyte review, episode 3. Right, so it's episode 2 of the review, episode 3 of the series. It's confusing, I know. It's going to get even more confusing when we're doing episode 1 of House of the Dragon. It's like a 3 fucking hour episode. Anyway, which also comes out this week, so we'll have a House of the Dragon review next week, I think? I don't know, we're working it out. We'll have an episode for you next week, either. We're planning for Monday right now, so look for that on Monday. But we're definitely going to try and get some more content out on that side. And then, yeah, so there's going to be 4 pods this week. This is going to be a lot, but we're going to make it work. What's the 4th one? I'm tweaking. Is there
The Boys.
Oh, wait. The Boys also comes out this week?
Yes, it does. This is the opening week of The Boys where...
Christ.
That should be pretty interesting.
All right, well, yeah. So we're going to have that.
It's the second to last season. The Boys is ending with season 5.
I fucking called that shit.
So... that'll be pretty cool.
It's not that hard to call, though. This has been historically what has happened. When there has been a TV show that is the level of quality that The Boys or Game of Thrones or... Well, I mean, Game of Thrones is a bit of an exception, but Game of Thrones was always going to be more than 5 seasons just because of the length of the story. If it's a good show and there's not a basis of source material that you're locked into, 5 seasons seems to be the mark. Because more than that, and you tend to run into like Game of Thrones territory,
I think. Probably House of the Dragon's going to end up being... probably 5.
House of the Dragon, depending on what they decide to do with that name, if House of the Dragon just becomes the story of the dance, it might be 3 seasons, or maybe even 2. You know what I mean? Which sounds insane.
It's guaranteed at minimally 3. Minimally 3.
They're covering a lot of ground in this season.
Well, yeah, they've got the season 3. It's another 8
jumping
episodes.
Past like months to get to the second or third episode. Like, we're not, you know, or at least weeks. You know what I mean? Like, so I shouldn't say months, weeks. Well, that's what kind of blew my mind when you told me about Blood and Cheese being in the first few, like 3 episodes. I was like, wait, isn't that like weeks after the start of the events that we just left out on? Like, what? How are we skipping all that time? But I guess it's a lot
it
more.
Might be the first episode.
That would okay. If we jumped straight there, then we just jumped a lot of time. That would be insane.
Might be the first one. Yeah, well,
that would be insane.
But that well, hey, guess here's the good thing. If you guys are House of Dragon fans, and I know a lot of people that watch this show are. A, you might have no idea what the hell we're talking about. B, you might be fucking excited about it. Make sure you join us for that, because I think it's safe to say that's a podcast we're looking forward to a lot.
Even I'll say this, and this isn't a call to action or anything, but if you're listening to this show right now, even if you're really not into fantasy stuff, but you also happen to be watching The Acolyte right now, because by the time this comes out, we won't have the new stuff out yet, but we'll still have our Acolyte reviews out. Just dip into them a little bit. See if even just the passion that we have for that show is interesting enough or is fascinating, whatever you want to call it enough. It gets your attention enough to want to watch the show and then maybe watch it. And then if you're not into it, whatever, if you don't have a Disney Plus subscription, whatever, just see if you like the show. And if you do, maybe add it to your podcast library. And if not, then hey, at least you gave it a shot. Speaking of giving it a shot, let's give the show a shot, Charlie. Let's jump into favorites, I guess. We always like to start off a little bit of positivity. It's my go this week, and I got a good one for us. No surprise, I'm picking another Collision main event. Talk of all shock. This conversation that we're having right now makes about as much sense as most Orange Cassidy matches in terms of, like, actually wrestling. Like, if you were trying to do, like, Bryan Danielson-style wrestling. And you know what I think my favorite part about his matches are, Charlie, is that if you actually were to really break them down move by move, he's actually one of the better technical wrestlers in the company. Like, it's kind of, like, underrated, in my opinion. Like, the dude knows how to wrestle. And I think he proves it against guys like Kyle O'Reilly and Brian more than anything. He gets to show off that side of his game. Because I've talked about this before, back when he was, you know, in Chikara. That's kind of, I mean, again, I think this is like kind of an American wrestling sort of like, people that watch American wrestling tend to not look at lucha wrestling in the same way. And they might think, oh, wow, Hechicero is really weird. I'm surprised that guy's over in Japan or Japan. Well, he'd be over in Japan too. I'm surprised that guy's over in Mexico. But like, there's a technical brawler wrestling style in Mexico that is completely foreign to us that we don't see here because it's more of a, it's not like it's done here, but it's done in a different way. So I think it's like interesting when you put Kyle in with a guy like Orange, because Kyle is like exactly, it's almost, okay, hear me out, Charlie. It's almost kind of like the perfect opponent for Orange, because Orange loves opponents to get unsettled by the mind games. And Kyle is such a serious character. You know what I mean? But not serious in the same way that like Roddy is. Roddy's obviously like a comedically overly serious, overly dramatic, right? And that works for him. But what Kyle does is he's super genuine and relatable. And so you put that in contrast with this fucking larger than life fucking superhero in Orange Cassidy, who just doesn't give a fuck and literally will beat you with his hands in his pockets, you know? And they collide, and Cassidy sells like everything that he does. I gotta say, dude, there was a lot of like sort of stand-up clinch and stuff like that. There was a lot of like, I wouldn't even call it chain wrestling. It was just like lockups and stuff like that. Like almost like an old schooler style of sort of like working the match through the locks and through the rest spots, even though these are two guys that don't really need a rest spot. You know what I mean? Like, which is to me using that as what for the art of it, as opposed to doing it because we need to, you know, we're gassing out or whatever, like some matches would need to do or something like that. And I mean, just leg locks, body locks, everything like that. I mean, Kyle O'Reilly, it's not hard for me to remember why I was pitching for this guy to get a world title shot before he got hurt like 2 years ago. You know what I mean? Because I think he was on pace to get one, wasn't he? Wasn't there like an announced title match he was getting that we were all like, he might win this? Like,
he might have gotten the match. I think it might have been on a Dynamite.
You know what? You're right. It was one of those ones where we were like, the world title was kind of in flux and we weren't sure if CM Punk was going for it yet. And we were like, you know what? If you want that match, CM Punk versus Kyle O'Reilly, fuck it. You know what I mean? Like, but anyway, I mean, they might have been setting up for him versus Brian or some shit like that. Like, anyway, the point is, Kyle's really good. It's like the mix of like the deliberately paced out comeback that Orange Cassidy loves to do, and Kyle just scratching and clawing his way, trying to earn his way back into the match. And then after Orange Cassidy picks up the win here, which I was actually a little surprised by, because like, well, does Kyle lose here? But I guess he does, because Orange is going toward the pay-per-view, right? So, because he's got a match with, we learned earlier
Orange
in the show,
Cassidy is far and above the number one contender if the rankings were still around. I mean, this
that's
guy
true.
Is
that's
not
fair. I feel like him versus Swerve would be huge too. But so basically, yeah. So Kyle tries to make the save when the Don Callis family attack, and Statlander got involved, and then Willow comes out and clears out all the ring. It is really good stuff here. I think that Orange Cassidy versus Zack Sabre Jr. is going to be fucking lit, especially after his match with Will and his match with, who was the match he had right after Will? There was a match like not long after the Will match where he had a like, stupid match against somebody from like Japan or something like that too.
Danielson, right?
You know, it might have been Danielson. He had like a run of a couple matches there. The point is, that should be really fun. I wish we had gotten something for Kyle on this show. It must just be because of the timing. Like, we just had him on the last couple shows and it didn't work out with Japan, or maybe Japan just isn't interested right now, but I don't know. Maybe we could get something for Kyle to do on TV. I wish there was a spare title for him right now. You know what I mean? Like, there just isn't. You know what I mean? Like, ooh, could we get him in the TNT title match?
I could definitely see them doing that.
That's
sure.
Because he's been, like, looking for opportunities. So, maybe. We'll see.
Potential.
Anyway, what did you think of this match? And we'll go to your favorite.
Another excellent quality AEW Collision main event, right? I thought Orange Cassidy here, he's been losing a lot of friends. He's been gaining a lot of enemies. You know, the way they closed the show, I believe he's starting to gain some allies. Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah, is this a formulation of the new best friends? Like, they're not going to call them that, I don't think. But is this Kyle O'Reilly and Willow Nightingale? Are these the new Trent and
It could be. Or Angela? We've seen this before where they'll kind of just do it to,
yeah, just to fight him, and then they'll go their separate ways. That would make sense.
Carry some of these shows out, and
I wouldn't mind him and Kyle as a tag team, though. I feel like that could be fun. Like,
I think it's safe to say Kyle O'Reilly, he's taking this return, and he's got a lot of honor right now. Honestly, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this. And I think it's something with his legacy here and how this return has kind of like it's really it's turned him into a I'm trying to think of the right words here, but his return has been fucking phenomenal. And this is a return that honestly we didn't know for a while if he was even going to come back, right? That was part of the whole gimmick. That was not a gimmick. This is real life.
Well, yeah, there was the question whether it wasn't so much that he couldn't physically. It was a question of if he does, will he have the same career that he was going to have or something like that. Like I know that when he came off this last injury, there was serious talks about him not coming back because
and how long
he was going to be out for. And he didn't know if he could do that and then ever come back. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because it was such a long time off. Because I think they told him he was going to, like, basically the amount of time he was gone for it, they told him that's how long it was going to probably be then, which is
and
insane.
And now he's
you know?
Taken his legacy. He's expanded upon it with these matches against Copeland, against Orange Cassidy, against Will Ospreay. To a lot of people, they loved the Roderick Strong match. We were not the biggest fans of it. But I think he's done something here by, he shifted his legacy in a lot of people's eyes. And it's done. It's starting to do it in my eyes too, I think. And now we're gonna get this babyface run. He's closing collisions. This is back to back closing collisions. Is he?
I think it's safe to say he's back to where he was when we left off, which is great because I was a little worried that because of how much momentum he'd built up so quickly in that like 2 or 3 week period when he was having those crazy matches on Dynamite. Like,
this is three of the last 4 weeks now of where we've done our shows here.
He slotted right back into that slot, you know? And then when Cope went down, dude, he said, oh, now I got to turn it up to 11. Like,
just truly phenomenal stuff. Again, I think I would have gave him the victory. They're doing something with Orange Cassidy, and, you know, he might be the one to go after the world championship next. Because if rankings are still a thing, I mean, he's far and away the number one contender right now. Let's jump into my favorite, right? And there's a couple things I could give this to. I'll tell you this, I almost gave it to a segment on Collision, and it's the formation of Samoa Joe's new group. It was beyond perfect, but I'm going to give it to a match this week. We're going with the Gates of Agony defeating Private Party. I was reading online. This match hasn't worked for everyone, but I'm going to tell you why it worked for me. Private Party's return, unbelievably, got the crowd excited. Seriously, can you... This is a rampage pop for Private Party. People were dancing with him. They wanted to root for them. They were cheering for them. They came out there. They had that super high-flying offense. While Gates of Agony is coming at him with that brooding, eating you down offense.
On paper, I don't know if I would have given that credit. Their offense, they're sort of like flippier, but not like... I almost would. This is gonna sound weird. You're gonna completely agree with me when I say the words. It's almost like a Hollywood high flyer kind of offense. Does that make sense to you? Like
I can see it.
Like that kind of vibe kind of clashes in a perfect way with the just absolute brutality and just like menacing nature of this other team. I don't know. Sometimes the contrast just works well, and this was a case where I think it did. They could run this one back, and I think there might be something.
Oh,
there.
Absolutely, Bishop Khan. He's got this kind of silent but deadly. You look at him; he's fucking sculpted like a Greek god.
Calling me in a fart?
No, but he's sculpted like a Greek god. God damn it! Good shit. Hey, shit. Oh, Leona, they've done so much character work on in terms of him trying for years to get over this persona, and arguably it still hasn't worked. But they've tried. He's tried for years to get over this character that he does. Yet, I really think this match worked.
It's fascinating, too, because Toa, if you listen to him on interviews, is like the most normal dude ever. Like, I just listened
he's
to
just
the
chill.
Bishop Khan, by the way, really smart-sounding guy. Like, he sounds like, not that I didn't think he was, but he just sounds like, you know how you look at him and you're like, oh, that guy, I bet he'd be, like, interesting to talk. He is, and it's fascinating. Anyway, go on. Go ahead. And he is actually a prince.
And it just, it worked out really well for me. They hit a double-team powerbomb on Cassidy to get the victory. That I didn't like. My main complaint about the match, Private Party losing on their return. But here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Hey, I tried to warn you.
Here's the thing about AEW. These tag teams, in my opinion, they went out there and did such a great job. I think they'll be rewarded for it. But I was reading online, other people just didn't quite work for. But Isaiah Cassidy, we mentioned a lot last week about all these reps he's been getting, and I think you felt it in this. Isaiah Cassidy's really good with Toa Leona. Look, let's just get the Gates of Agony away from the fucking Brian Cage group, right? Let's break them off into their own tag team.
Of Agony. Do you think that the fact that they came out as Gates suggests that that trio is maybe already dead?
I really want to hope so, because they should just be a tag team. Let's let them feud with other tag teams.
And I don't understand why it would be such a travesty for him to join Gates. I get that that's been their tag team name, but that was a name that AEW came up with. So they can't take that with them anyway if they go somewhere else, I don't think, unless Tony's just really nice about it. Like, you know, like.
And I think Brian Cage works better on his own. I mean, I really do just kind of let him be his own guy.
I honestly think I would have less problems with Brian Cage if he was just a singles guy, even if he was still a part of that group. Like, if he was just doing singles and not, like...
And he had just singles this week.
I think Gates are next up, dude. I honestly do. Like, can you think about it?
If Gates are not next up, it's gotta be Private Party.
Yeah, it's one of these two teams, and I think they know it, and I think the fact that Gates won here is really great for them. And I think Gates know that they're next up. That sounded like a couple months ago on TIJ, whatever the fuck, Talk is Jericho. It sounded like that was, I'm not sure how exactly I'd have to look. I don't really feel like pulling up my podcast app, or I'd look.
But the rich get richer if Gates of Agony get over, and if Private Party get over.
Think about it. This would be their third title win in like 3 years, if you think about it. Like, so yeah. That would be huge for their careers, especially if it was AEW Gold.
I hope they stick together as a tag.
Maybe they could be Bullet Club Gold. Maybe they keep Cage in and they throw him against Bullet Club Gold first, and then they win the tag titles. I don't know that, because I think I'm not sure. I mean, okay, here's a real question.
We got to get away from the trios with them.
They might go toward the trios division, because they haven't won AEW Trios Gold yet, and you could take it off them really quickly and have them put it back on somebody else, right? Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know if we can go straight from Forbidden Door, because I assume Bucks are not going to be tagging on the show, probably, unless it's in like an 8-man or something like that. So, which I might be completely blatantly wrong about. They might have a New Japan opponent they really want to face, right? But I can't think of a tag team over there that would really move the needle, you know? Anyway. Ooh, unless they're going to put him against War Dogs. My God.
There's
anyway,
options.
Anyway. But like, assuming the Bucks aren't doing anything on this show, who do you think their next opponent is? Shit.
I'm hoping it's Private Party.
Because FTR injured. FTR, that would be a good timing. FTR injured. Yeah.
There's options. And I think that's the fun part about wrestling, right? We have unlimited options. We're moving in a really... This is a new era for the company. I mean, who's going to be holding these things in Wembley? Who's contending at Wembley? It all plays into part here. So, let's jump into our news. And yet again, it's time for another edition of Contract Mania. I fucking love that little theme.
That's our fucking... That's not just Contract Mania. That's the news intro now.
That's for news? Perfect. I'm in.
100%.
Following up on last week, Chad Gable, it's all signs are pointing to him re-signing with WWE. I mean, let me just triple check here. But, yeah, I mean, it sounds like even Yahoo is reporting this. Everyone's been reporting it. It sounds like he's on his way back to WWE. Which, look, if we're being straight up honest, good for him. I mean, this guy, he is an S-tier wrestler, in my opinion. I've always been a little high on Chad Gable, but I think the populace is finally coming around to him. He is unbelievably talented. That being said, Haiku Leo, it sounds like he is done with New Japan Pro Wrestling, and he is WWE bound. His entire family's working there now with Tama Tonga, Tonga Loa. Now you bring in Haiku Leo. I have never been the biggest fans of those three, personally, in New Japan.
Bro, imagine there's, like, some Samoan crime family that's, like, just fucking been laundering money through the WWE for decades.
It's just, imagine. Might not have to imagine. But it sounds like Haiku Leo is on his way. So good for him. I mean, this is going to be a big payday for him. Haiku Leo, he's always been dubbed as having just... so much
never
potential.
Hated him in anything we've seen.
I've never hated Haiku,
but he's also not spectacular. But you know what? He's big enough that the WWE can make. He's tall enough. Like, he's got to be like almost 7 foot.
He's only 33. Yeah, he's 6'8" build. So WWE will probably bill him as
They more than 7 foot for sure. They did that with Big Cass, so they'll do that with him. Or if they don't, they'll be like, he's 6'9" or something like that. He's nearly 7 foot, you know. And then
my God,
He'll be tagging with fucking Omos within like a week. You know what I mean? Like, and they'll be like the
new bloodline,
the new skyscrapers. Ooh, how about look, that? The new skyscrapers. Hear me out. That could work actually. Him and Omos just being two meat men, just fucking slapping the meat. Oh,
slapping the meat. Now he's gonna be joining Solo Sikoa's bloodline. They're gonna be running bloodline versus bloodline. It's all bloodline 24/7. Fuck it, we ball.
Ricochet. Okay, hear me out. The old group, yep. That fucking, you know, Cedric, fucking Shelton's gone now, right? So he wouldn't be in it. But
yes.
So, but Cedric, I assume MVP's still there.
Cedric's new tag partner is Ashante the Adonis. Formerly,
okay, so you
of
take Sword those
Strickland's
two, right, and you put him back with MVP. Like maybe you call it a different group, and then you grab Obafemi and Omos, and they face the bloodline. That could work.
Obafemi. Oh my god, he's so fucking good.
He's great with that title right now, too.
Ricochet. This is a new one developing.
I really hope this guy comes to AEW, for like, fuck's sake. Give me that shit at Wembley. Injected into my veins.
In the past week, Ricochet has gone from his contracts in the air. There's reports that he's done with WWE by PW Insider.
Bro, imagine Ricochet getting the fucking contract release, gets fucking Swerve's title reign deleted because they want to put it on fucking Will.
Here's the biggest thing. Last night on Raw, they wrote him off TV. Braun Breaker killed him. So Ricochet is probably gone.
Wait, so is Braun on the main roster then? Tweaky?
Yeah.
When did Braun's that happen?
The draft. A little bit before the draft. April-ish.
I mean, he was always going to skyrocket to the main. I just was I wasn't sure that they had actually pulled the trigger. Like, I knew I heard about him debuting, but I wasn't sure if it was going to be like Johnny and... was where he was debuted, but they were like, can I go back? And they were like, yeah, you can go back. So,
and then our final one for this week, Penta El Cerro Miedo. His AEW contract is expiring this summer, and it's been heavily reported that WWE is interested. Tony Khan's also responded back. He's interested. Let the bidding war for Penta El Cerro
Miedo. This is where TNA sneaks in and offers him $10 million to fucking work 3 weeks, 3 days a year, you know? No, but... I think Penta will resign. I think he's been treated well.
He deserves for everyone to have him interested in him.
100%. But I think he's an AEW guy. I think he's had more opportunities there. I think it fits his style more. I don't think that just not being able to have matches with fucking Roosh's brother. What the fuck's his name? I can't think of it.
Dragon Lee.
I don't think Dragon Lee's enough of a draw to get him there. Andrade might be, because those two could have a fucking
movie. Did we see them have a match against each other?
If they did, it was in tag.
I don't remember if they did.
I don't think they ever had a singles, and you thought with the run that Penta was on, and then the runs that... Shit, that run of collision matches, that might be... Do we think... Okay, here's your poll this week, because this is fucking relevant, because we're talking about guys going back and forth. Was Andrade's run of collision matches last year the best run that a singles wrestler had on Collision last year? I think it might have been.
Ooh, I like that as a poll.
And people might not be as interested in it as the last poll. Sorry, I'm doing my best here, trying to make it relevant to the conversation.
Did Andrade have the best Collision singles run last year?
And I think he did. I genuinely think he did. I think he had a fucking incredible run of matches, which was, I believe, capped off by a match with Malakai Black that they finally ran back, right? Or maybe they finally just had that match. I remember him having a match with Malakai in there, or something like Malakai or somebody like that in there, and it was just it capped it all off. No, it wasn't Malakai. It was his match with Jay White. That's what it was.
So we did have an incredible 2022 match where it was Andrade and Rush versus Penta and Rey Fénix at Quake by the Lake. That was the only time that
now that you say that, remember that match being really good. Because I think Andrade was on a similar run at the top of the pool. He was just having dumb matches. Like, God, Quake by the Lake, we did that once. Damn, we did Quake by the Lake once and said, fuck that shit. That's crazy. I don't think even that's a big enough draw to get him to go over there. Could Japan make a move on Penta? Now that I could see. But I don't know if they want to shake the boat with AEW right around Forbidden Door. But, depending on when the contract expires, if it's post-Forbidden Door, it might be kind of fucking fair game, you know? Like,
yeah.
But I think Penta's been treated well in AEW. Has he been made a single star yet?
I think we need a New Japan wrestler to hold AEW gold to start to make this even a little bit. So I'm really hoping someone from New Japan wins something at Forbidden Door.
That'd be cool.
Because there's a part of me that does feel a little guilty with Moxley holding that belt. And
nah, you know, it's fine. Then we got anybody. Who the fuck would be? All right, here's a real question: who the fuck would be holding it in New Japan right now? Like, let's be real.
I'm thinking Shooter holding either the International or the TNT.
Well, I'm saying who would be holding the New Japan title in New Japan right now? I can't think of anybody.
Oh yeah, Shingo probably, right?
Right, so, and Shingo would be fine, but
well, one of the young guys, they gotta just toss it on them.
Put it on the fucking Aswang. It's time.
I'm cool. Fuck it, Aswang, we ball. As it always, we have some more injury updates. Dax Harwood. Fuck. You might be thinking, I just saw him wrestle Saturday.
That bald, mustachioed motherfucker.
Yeah, and Dax has a severe lower back hematoma. He posted a video on Twitter kind of explaining everything that happened. He feels really bad. And
hematoma, yeah. Is that one of them foreign cars?
So he might be out a good month. Depending on how bad this is and how bad he's let it fester, it could be out even longer. Adam Copeland is optimistic about his fractured leg.
Will wrestlers just take care of their fucking selves? I mean, I'm one to talk, but still, like, what the fuck, man? Like,
this is Adam Copeland's 7th surgery. Good God. But that's all for injury.
Lucky number 7.
That's all we have. And we have a new member of the AW broadcast team, Alicia Tout. Is that how you say your last name? I don't think I've ever heard it.
Yeah, something like that.
Tout?
AKA, and this is MJF's words, not mine, Tits McGee from Whore Island, as he likes to refer to her. For those of you that don't know the AW lore there, this is the chick that slapped MJF in that interview that I know you have seen if you're even remotely a fan of this company. Like, there's no way you've seen MJF and not seen that clip. Yeah. It's that chick. And I'm just kind of surprised this didn't happen sooner, because this is kind of her thing. Like, that it's her job. Maybe she didn't want it. Maybe she just didn't want to, like, push and be like, hey, I want to work here just because... MJF didn't want to seem like nepotism, but like, hey, fuck it. She's fucking talented and she's...
Fuck it, we ball.
And she's with MJF, and it'll probably make MJF happier that his girlfriend is there, you know what I mean? Like,
and yeah. We officially got our Katie Aura on the AEW roster, so she's also resuming her duties.
So, you know, as always, the rich get richer, because now MJF gets 2 incomes, you know? So, great.
Fuck it, we ball. Yeah. And I think that's it for news this week. So, let's jump into... Ring of God.
The episode is... I don't even care anymore. Who cares? They don't care, so why would I? Yeah. The only person that cares about Ring of Honor, Charlie, besides Bryan Danielson and Christopher Daniels, of course, is Athena, and it makes me sad. I think Billie Starks cares a little bit, too, though. I think she feels like she owes Ring of Honor a little bit for giving her opportunities. All right. Speaking of giving opportunities in Ring of Honor... We got Queen Aminata taking on Maserati. Maserati's one we haven't seen in a bit. I don't know if she's just been injured or it's just been we haven't been in the right towns for her, but she was one that was even featured on Ring of Honor a couple of times in the last couple of years, and we haven't really seen her, and I think she's one of those like pseudo sort of on the roster, but not really Ring of Honor chicks, and she did some good stuff. Charlie, it's glaringly obvious. Queen Aminata is ready to take the next step. Yes. I think, what's the next pay-per-view? Is it Death Before Dishonor? Yes. And that's next
month,
right?
It'll be held
at
Arlington.
Or is it this month?
No, it's July.
July. So next month, I think it's time. I think you put the title on Queen Aminata. I think it's time.
The world?
Yes.
I'm in.
I think it's time. I think Athena's had a glorious title run. I think if you're not going to have her surpass Samoa Joe and Nigel as longest champion, like if you're not gonna have her just or whatever that is, like that's got the longest reigns, if you're not gonna have her go like 1,000+ days or something, I think it's time. And I don't know that Aminata is the hottest that she was. I think that was back like a month ago before there wasn't anything to do anymore, you know, like and I think that's unfortunate, the timing that there was no pay-per-view for them to put it on her on, and they didn't have the balls to just put it on her on TV, you know what I mean? I think if you don't do it next month, then we might miss the opportunity on Aminata. You might miss that boat. You know what I mean? Because
which we don't want to do.
Because I think she's hot right now. I think the crowd loves her, and I think the stuff with her in red right now is great for Ring of Honor TV. So, yeah. All right. This is the whole fucking segment that kind of turned me around on Ring of Honor this week, because I was like, for most of this stuff, but like, all right, Dalton Castle's backstage with Lexi Nair, Charlie, and he starts off by like apologizing to Lexi for being a little fucking weird lately, And she's like, bro, like, what the hell is the problem? Like, are you good? Like, he's like, yeah, I'm fine now. I promise. It's great. And then Johnny TV shows up again. So this is still not over, Charlie. But I think I like the direction that we're taking it. Because okay. Now they're saying shit like, no, I'm bigger than you. Like, they're making dick jokes, okay?
Let's go.
So we're doing the fucking hand gimmick where you're like, no, I'm this big. And you're like, hold your hands like two like distances apart from each other. Like, I don't know if you guys can get the idea of what I'm trying to say, but if you saw the segment, you'll know what I mean. And by the end, they formed into one giant dick joke, but it requires both of them to use both of their arms to make Johnny TV's point for him. And I think that was a subtle hint, Charlie, that they're going to join forces.
They can be called the long doggers.
Something. The long cocks of the mean streets of Long Cock. I don't know. But fucking Dalton, I think, is back at this point. I think he's back to being Dalton again. And I think his match later on with Kyle kind of sort of proved that. But I thought this was fucking hilarious. And if they decide to do something with those two long term as like a tag team, just an Ring of Honor wrestling tag match, maybe they're not even like a tag, but like whenever the two of them get into some shit, like because the respect they have for each other now, they're like buddies or something. I don't know. They're just both just weird enough that I could see them being friends. You know what I mean? Like, and so then we go from that into Marina Shafir, who, by the way, has been fucking killing it lately. I have to give credit. Her video packages have been great. Her fucking in-ring content has been phenomenal lately. Hey, how to take on Amira here. She's looking jacked, stacked, and ready to attack is what I put in my fucking notes. That's how fucking... I was into this match. She was taking on the hometown wrestler here. I think she did a great job. And I think she's really locking in on torquing in on the submissions. She's focusing on what she's really good at and what makes her stand out. She's taking the right advice right now. I think Marina Shafir, with a little bit more work, can be a top women's star in both companies. 1,000%.
I have to 100% agree. I mean, we've recognized the potential in the past. She's getting so much better.
I didn't have a single complaint about this. From entrance to when she was in the ring, everything she did in the ring, she didn't look like she was lost out there. She is locked in, and I think it's time. I think you pull the trigger on something. If she's not, I think Billy defends it. I think Billy defeats Red, probably.
Remember, we had the match with her and Billy last year, kind of towards the end of the year.
100%. It was good.
Let's run that back for the title.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think after she beats Red, maybe you have her beat Red as like her first match after that, and then so that kind of puts her right in the title scene, you know what I mean? And then you have her win, and then Billy comes out and attacks her. And it's not even one of those things where she calls out the champion. She's just beating so many people up that Billy goes after her. That's what I would love, you know what I mean? I think they're setting that up. I think as much as I give it shit, the Ring of Honor women's division is in fucking great shape right now. So, Dalton Castle and his package took on Kyle Fletcher for the Ring of Honor World Television Championship. I love that this was just a straight up match. Dalton Castle has enough cachet that he just gets the title match. You know what I mean? Good stuff there. You know what I mean? And I like love the fact that both of these guys seem to care about Ring of Honor, Charlie. I mentioned that earlier. Do I think Athena's one mainly the only one? Maybe Billy, yes. I think Kyle Fletcher fucking cares too, because again, it gave him an opportunity and turned him into a single star. You know what I mean? Like, when at the time we weren't even sure he was going to get on TV because of his partner being injured. You know what I mean? Like, and now there's a shock. Now, Charlie, and this is going to sound mind blowing, I will be mind blown if they put him with fucking Mark, if he doesn't have a title. If he still has that title when Mark gets back and they put him back together, I'm going to be mind blown. You know what I mean? Like,
it's kind of crazy how long Mark has been out that I forgot they were a tag team there for a minute.
That's kind of crazy. That shows how much he's improved as a wrestler in singles at all, because he didn't even really think about this as like a real career option outside of he wanted it, but he didn't think it was going to be possible. It's just funny how life works out like that sometimes.
So Mark had a wrist injury at WrestleDream. Jesus, mm-hmm. I don't know why I blanked on that.
Yeah.
So that's 8 months now?
Yeah. So he should be back, I would think, in the next couple, at the very least. But
he might
like
be having some real big struggles with that wrist.
Wrist injuries can be pretty brutal to recover from. I mean, you know, especially as a wrestler, you know what I mean? That's pretty, you know, you need to be able to use your arms, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I thought Dalton saw his ass off here. It's just a fun TV match, you know what I mean? I love everything that Kyle's doing lately. It's great. Everything that Kyle's doing, not on AEW TV, I should say. Even like his promo work on here, like I'll get into that later, but it's good stuff. The infantry took on, by the way, the direction they're going with him too, I fucking love for the pay-per-view. And I really, again, another opportunity to pull the trigger that I'll get into in a second that I really hope they go with, you know what I mean? Let's see. The infantry took on Jacoby Watts and Nick Camarado. I don't really know what the plan is for Watts and Camarado at this point. You got like Camarado apologizing to people after beating him up. You know what I mean? Like, I look, they're going to do something. The infantry, I do believe, did pick up the win here. So good momentum for them, I guess. So yeah, let's get into what I was talking about. Big Shotty Lee Johnson was backstage. He's like, man, I've been stacking these wins and nobody fucking cares. What the fuck is going on, man? I'm calling out Kyle, even though I just got a title shot. And Kyle's like, I mean, dude, bro, you just go back to the fucking back of the line, bro. Like, what do you mean? I just beat you. What the fuck? Like, asshole. And he's like, but I don't think you can beat me again. So I'm challenging you to a 2 out of 3 falls match. And he was like, okay, fine. Just to prove that I can beat you because I want better competition. Fine. Fuck you. 2 out of 3 falls. And I think that's, is that going to be on next week on Ring of Honor? Or was it announced for Dynamite or something?
I believe so.
Okay, it's next week on Ring of Honor then. That should be good. I don't think they're going to put it on him. But if we want to set up, like, maybe down the line for Shotty. See, this sucks because I wish they had pushed it to the pay-per-view because I do think Shotty has a chance to win that title. Like, really, actually. I've been saying that for months, actually, to be honest with you. I'm surprised he hasn't won it yet or anything for that matter. Like, oh well. But I do like that that's going to be a match. It should be a really good match. Billy Starks took on Zamaya for the Ring of Honor Women's World Television Championship. 11 victories in a row, and just quick little win here, but Red Velvet attempted to exact vengeance upon the victor on this day and was rejected by that said victor and was not allowed until Hina Minata graced the top of the ramp and shoved her ass back into the ring and said, "See, die, Zamaya Susan." She didn't die, but she was beat up. And then in the absolute fucking wet fart of an ending, we had the Iron Savages taking on the Dark Order and Johnny DB and the Baby Boys in a Triple Trios yawn main event of all time. All right. And that was Ring of Honor this week. So I hope that was worth your 20 minutes.
Let's jump over to AEW Dynamite.
There was some good stuff on there, but yeah. Way less than I thought. I thought, honestly, when I said that to you the other day, I was like, actually believe it.
Kyle Fletcher and Dalton having a good match stuff. Was nice to see.
I don't know. I just thought the Billy match I thought was pretty good. I don't know. It wasn't terrible, I guess. I don't know.
MJF opens up Dynamite for us. His eyes are bloodshot. He's a little stoned. He's here to put everyone on notice. Wrestle probably some guy from Japan or Mexico.
His eyes are all red because he's been smoking dick.
At Forbidden Door. Brings up the Rainmaker. Talks about swerving around part of the Mogul Embassy. The most egregious claim is from a Cockney cockhead who said he's the best in the world, bruv. Last time he checked, Ospreay isn't Chris Jericho. Adam Cole, Rhodes, Tanahashi, Moxley, Danielson, and Omega. Says he never defeated all of them, but MJF did. If Ospreay wants to lie through his yellow crooked teeth, Silly Billy's in the best in the world MJF is. He became the face of AEW, best matches, moments in the sport, most hated to most beloved. And yeah, Roosh's music hits, walks the stage, and he said, while MJF has been gone, Roosh has been working. Gets a big celebration for returning, but where's his big moment? Said he's going to take his moment and hits his tagline.
Dude. I love this segment. I got to say, Roosh looked like a fucking deer in the headlights out there.
And you know what didn't help that? An AEW crowd hitting him with what chance?
Yeah, dude. I think
We don't do that.
That's got to be tough. It's going to be tough for him to recover. This is going to be a main event. This will be the This will probably, I would assume, be the non-New Japan AEW match that we're getting going into this pay-per-view, right? Like, so, because this doesn't feel like it's going to be if this is just a one-off match, why?
What makes it feel like it's not a one-off is the post-match, or the post-little angle here with security breaking it up. MJF said he couldn't understand him. that didn't
poor choice of words by him. Poor choice. I know MJF is trying to like sell the moment, and but like, and that's the kind of thing he would say.
Worked
that's
well.
Fine. Yeah, that's good. But that to me, because of how the segment was going, and I think even he probably realized in the moment after he said it, you could even kind of see it on his face, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have gone there because that was. I mean, I don't know if MJF regrets anything he says like that, but I'm sure if he looked back on it, he might not say that because of how the segment looks. Because I think sometimes, and this is something that I think even MJF can be guilty of, sometimes because they're not WWE people for like 10 years, they don't have the experience to know. Sometimes you don't say things in a certain situation because you got to read the room sometimes and know, okay, Rush is kind of dead in the water right now. If I bury him, the crowd is going to latch onto that and they're going to remember that and not all the great stuff he can do in the ring. So what sucks is I don't remember is, dude, when he's in backstage, Rush sounds fucking so coherent and fucking like he has a thought.
It was just a weaker promo, and I just, MJF buried it a little bit too much, and MJF's the baby face here, so it just kind of sucks.
Yeah, and MJF, I mean, we can't blame him for that, right? Because he's a shark in the water, so he's going to smell blood, he's going to go for it, right? But, man, tough break for Rush, because if this didn't kill this angle, I don't know, man.
The match is incredible, and I'm sure it
will. Yeah, I hope so, too. But I think if anything, there was long-term plans for this, that this segment might have kiboshed that a little bit. You know what I mean? Like,
a video package of Roderick Strong training for the main event match. Cool stuff. Impromptu match for a shot at the international title next week, where Rey Fénix defeats Orange Cassidy, Kyle O'Reilly, and Jay Lethal.
Jay Lethal? What? Who? What the fuck is Jay Lethal doing in there?
Holy fucking athleticism. This match was on fire. And it was kind of cool to
see. So they were like, all right, we got Orange Kyle, fucking Fénix. Right, do we have anyone else athletic? Jay, you're like 40, right? But you could still move? Like,
it was nice to see Jay Lethal. Jay Lethal and Orange Cassidy have had some really fun matches together, and it was nice to see their exchanges again.
But they had that was actually one of the early international title matches that I was like not super into on paper that ended up getting there for me in the end. You know what I mean? Like,
and they ran it back during that same first title reign. It became abundantly clear I was rooting for Rey Fénix here pretty fast because I didn't want Orange Cassidy to go back for his title again. We don't need that. Orange Cassidy should be going towards the world title if he's going to do a title. And I just have really enjoyed this match. An athletic feat, you could say, right? Will Ospreay versus Rey Fénix is what booking wrestling's all about.
It was really speaking athletic feat, freaking Rey Fénix, dude. But fucking light.
I can already tell you that.
He's on his bullshit right now, man.
That's a favorite for next week, so quick spoiler for next week. Flash pin victory on Lethal. Holy fucking, just
hey, that hear me out. Stupid. If we are going to get Penta's contract expiring next month, or whenever it's going to be, in the next couple of months, right? Give me that Rey Fénix. Give me the Battle of the Brothers on pay-per-view before he goes. I would love that.
If Penta is going to leave, we should do that match. Don Callis and Trent hit the ring. Cassie was going to get out of
there. You can even set that up, bro. Like, if he's really determined on leaving, you could be like, Penta, be like, if you defeat me, I will leave AEW forever. You know, like.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Cassidy grabs a chain. He wants to fight back. Statlander stands between them. Statlander will put her foot so far up Cassidy's ass, he'll be coughing up shoe leather. She decks him. Willow Nightingale hits the ring. And Stokely, you know, he jumps on Statlander's back, which is pretty funny. I am the learning tree. Arrives. He gave some pointers to the driver since he's had a driver's license for over 35 years. We're seeing the gimmick evolve again. It fully embraced something new this week. And I can't quite put my finger on what it is. But now he's like just really loud. I don't know. There's more than him just being loud. I
don't know what this gimmick is, but it's evolving and it's getting more annoying by the minute. And I just...
It was a little too annoying this week, right?
I think he could pull it back a little bit, but I think that just means he's going to lean into it more, knowing Chris Jericho, so...
Bill and Keith kind of had some funny little... Brian Keith has an incredible line later. Renee's backstage with Willow. She accepts she lost the Double or Nothing. She congratulates Mercedes. She did have her pinned, so there's unfinished business down the line. Statlander betrayed her friendship while she was at her lowest. Smile is strength, but after being stabbed in the back, you don't know how dangerous that could be. And then Orange Cassidy came in, gave her a little fist bump. Christopher Daniels came out and announced on June 30th, Forbidden Door, they will crown a new TNT champion in a ladder match. Another qualifying match will take place right fucking now.
I'm telling you, bro. This guy is the GM. Fuck Tony Khan. This guy's the GM. Yeah,
he pretty much is. That's the way it's feeling. I guess this is a good moment to pause here for a second. Do we need an authority figure like this in AEW?
No, but I think it's nice to have Daniels to just come out every now and then. He's not really wrestling that much anymore, and he looks good, damn good in his suit, especially that red suit. So fuck it, run it back.
I personally...
Fuck it, Daniels balls.
I would have always advocated against having this kind of authority figure in AEW. How they're doing it with Christopher Daniels, kind of in an anti-AEW versus the Elite thing, it's working for me.
Yeah, it's almost like the anti-authority authority figure, except he's not. He's more the authority figure than the other guys are, but it's like, you know. But I
when
think
when this feud's over, yeah, I want this around.
I think that would be wise. I don't think this is going to be – I think it's long-term, so I think this could be a little while that we have this. So we could get a little bit better.
I think it could be all summer. It's probably going to be going until all in.
The summer of the arena. Bucks.
I mean, really, it might be going that long, so.
Are you saying we could be in for a long summer?
The ROH champion, Mark Briscoe, is alive. He's here. He's back on TV.
You're saying he wasn't stabbed in a back alley in Sandy Fork? My God.
He's somehow here, and he faces Brian Cage for the TNT title match. This match was pretty competitive back and forth. Mark Briscoe came on and came forth and won. Redneck Kung Fu comeback was kind of the main moment of the match here. We got Jack Perry applauding. It's his destiny to win the TNT title, no matter what Tony Khan thinks. I happen to agree with that. It'd be nice to see Jack get some gold, see how he does with it. Renee is backstage with Hook and Samoa Joe. Wouldn't call this a mentorship when he's immediately interrupted by... are they still the Premier Athletes? Or did they change it?
No, it's Premier Athletes, yeah.
It is Premier Athletes. Oh, I second-guessed myself there because I didn't write it down. Nice talks trash.
Hey, how about their fucking back. Music that they debuted this week, bro? That shit was lit.
It was very good. Very good.
Nobody cared, but I did. I was like, oh, this is awesome. Their music was good before, though, too, to be fair.
I am the learning tree. Approaches Matt Menard and Angelo Parker backstage. He congratulates Menard for taking over commentary. It's because he's better than you, brother. And he applauded Parker for his recent marriage and upcoming baby. As they're walking away, Brian Keith... tells Angelo Parker, you better make sure that baby respects Chris Jericho.
I love that Brian Keith just got thrown into this, but he's just leaning into it. He just doesn't give a fuck because it's an opportunity, you know what I mean?
It's like, going to work for him.
Oh, 100%.
It's going to work for him.
I think it's already working better for him than it is for Cass. I think Cass is too much of the, like, trying to be like Chris's gimmick right now, but I think that's why this works right now, because you have the contrast of the angry Brian Keith, you know what I mean? Like, he's just pissed off because he's like, fuck, sure I became with Jericho? God damn it, like...
better respect. The Acclaim the Daddy Ass make their entrance. Cut off by the Young Bucks. Get the fuck back here. They read the employee handbook saying they can't insult the EVPs and said they cut the segment.
I actually am surprised that we're just now getting to this point in the story where they're actually cutting segments from the show. I'm not saying they should have been doing it left, right, and center from the beginning, but it did feel like this was something that was coming, but like it just hadn't happened yet, so I'm glad they added that flavor to the story. And now the Acclaimed will have a reason to be angry with them. What's nice about this is that they basically have set up feuds for the Young Bucks for the next year by all the fucking shenanigans, you know what I mean? Like, so.
Renee's joined by Swerve. Welcome back the little bitch, MJF. He'll deal with him later. He has an envelope.
MJF got fucking friend-zoned by Swerve.
Prince Nana, send this to Will Ospreay in London. He'll pay for shipping. He's going to knock Roddy off the mountain tonight and also brings up the Elite winning at Anarchy in the Arena. The next time there's a Team AEW, you don't forget the AEW World Champion. Swerve is all over television, and he feels like the champion. It's the best way to put it.
Nah, man, they're using him too much.
Title versus title at Forbidden Door. TBS title versus New Japan Strong title. Mercedes Moné, money, takes on Stephanie Vaquer. Get a video package showcasing their history. Pretty well done. They made good use of Mercedes this week, despite her not being on the show. She also had a little QR code kind of running throughout the show.
So Mercedes is going to be a double champ here at the Forbidden Door, huh?
Could be. IWGP World Champion Jon Moxley, Brian Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli, and ROH Pure Champion Wheeler Yuta defeat Volador Jr., Esfinde, Magnus, and Rugido. This is just a good, fun CMLL versus Blackpool Combat Club match. You would have looked like you didn't miss a step. Our Blackpool Combat Club, the greatest faction.
I like the CMLL guys are like, hey, Blackpool guys, we're not fucking done with you. Well, we gave you a month for your fucking anarchy bullshit, but no, we're not fucking done with you assholes. Like,
Daniel said Busaiko Neon Volador, Yuta spinning angle
slam. It's got a match we're getting, right? Volador versus Danielson. Like, maybe not on the pay-per-view, but just like on TV in the next couple weeks. That'd be kind of sick. I'd be done with it.
So that was pretty nice. This is awesome chance, you name it. Christian, I am the learning tree. Approaches someone in catering. And he says, the proper way to scoop food into a bowl due to his experience. What the? What are we even doing with that? Video package for Daniel Garcia is shown. It's actually a pretty emotional video package. He's documenting the serious car accident a few years ago. Life is too short to let opportunities pass by, and that's why he took initiative last week by challenging Will Ospreay for the international title. Ospreay can't outgrind and outwork Garcia. Now, if you're talking about let's do some real fucking matches, Will Ospreay's got Rey Fénix, Daniel Garcia, and Swerve Strickland on his upcoming card.
I like those odds.
I will always, always be very happy with
Under over 15 stars between those three matches.
Yeah, you might take the over, Jesus. Camera's caught up with the Acclaim, then Daddy is trying to barge in the Elite's locker room. They're held back by Elite security. This is not AEW security, it's Elite security. This is private security they pay for. The Bucks will have to deal with them. They call the Bucks jackasses and they fuck off. Patriarchy are brought into the Bucks office. Christian Cage said if anyone could trust in his making things right, it's the EVPs. Deserves to have gold and demand another title shot. Matt agrees. They deserve all the gold. Let's see what they can do. They promise that they'll be happy if they continue to scratch their back. They'll scratch theirs. It's nice to see some politicking in real time.
Yeah, I mean, as we know, Christian is the master of it, so.
Saraya takes on and defeats Mariah May. I'll tell you this. I was a little shocked with the result, but I also get it at the same time. Saraya is a legend. So, losing to Saraya will never hurt.
Nah, I had one takeaway from the end of this match, which was blast.
I thought the match itself was pretty solid. Saraya was able to kind of play up with Mariah May. Mariah May really knows how to... She really knows how to make it look like she's beating the living shit out of you. I think that's that Japan training in her, where it looks like she's got some serious strong style going on.
Yeah, I think Mariah... So what I've started to learn about her from what I see, it seems like she was actually pretty active in the British wrestling scene for a while, and then it was the stardom thing that kind of like... If you look back at, like, occasionally we'll scroll, like, and just, like, you know, I'll keep it a buck. I've scrolled through an Instagram or two of some of these wrestlers from time to time just to, like, see what their lives are like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't really even have an Instagram, but, like, you can just look at what they post and be like, oh, look, they went to fucking Ryogoku or something. I don't know, like, whatever, like.
They went to Cabo again.
Whatever, right? Yeah, like, you know, whatever rich people do, you know? And it seems like she was in Japan teaming with Mina for, like, fucking 5, 6, something like that, years. Like, this was, like, it seems like that's really when her career took off. So I think it's more like she always had, like, sort of, like, that harder British style, even if she didn't train there, even if she was legit trained in Japan. Like, I don't know what her exact story is. But from what I've been able to take away, it seems like she just leans into that British and Japanese style a lot more. I don't hate her losing here.
No, I don't at all. It doesn't hurt to lose to Saraya.
And you know what I will say about Saraya? This is one of the better matches I think she's just randomly had on TV recently.
Yeah.
I think she settled back in a while ago. I think we have to kind of just consider her back at this point because they can just strategically deploy her at will at the point. And that makes me happy because I think when she first came back, especially with the Brit match, and I think even she realized the Brit match didn't get where it needed to get to for her return.
And
she's now, I think if she had that match with Britt now, I think it would actually get there. I think it would get there and it would be good. And it could maybe even be 15, 20 minutes. You know what I mean? And I think they would deliver. And I don't think the first time. I think they all knew what they were going to get out of that first match. I think it's a lot like how the difference between how we perceive Nigel versus Bryan now and what it would actually be. And I think I think that's why Nigel's taking the time to train for like a year, like he has been, so that he can just jump right back in and give everybody what they want. Because I'm not saying Saraya didn't do that. I think Saraya was just so excited to be back that she just jumped right back in, and it was just timing wasn't perfect, and it wasn't her fault, and it wasn't Tony's fault. It was just sometimes things don't work out. But I think now at this point we can say that she is. I think this is the Saraya that we were all hoping she would be at this point.
Yeah. And something very important about the finish here. Saraya applied the sharpshooter chicken wing, but Tony Storm was the one that said, Mariah May, you can't stay in this for too long. And then pretty much immediately after she says that, May ends up tapping out.
Yeah, so it's not just that she's using Mariah May to get an advantage. She actually does care about her at this point. Which...
plans within plans. Schemes yeah. within schemes.
My God.
Mina Shirakawa hits the ring. Holy. She cleared house. She, was she confronting Mariah May.
Boba Blast.
And she and Tony Storm had a very intense face-off. Mariah May's in the middle. I've seen this movie before. And this was this movie came out.
Saying Mariah May is the Zendaya of the situation.
Mariah May is 100% the Zendaya. She even retweeted a poster of her being the Zendaya in this situation.
Oh, no, okay. You had to send me that tweet. God damn
100%.
It.
100%. And she's trying to play Peacemaker. Tony Khan made the graphic.
Cena's Peacemaker. What the fuck?
And when Tony Khan made the graphic, he put Mariah May in both corners. So Mariah May's on the poster twice. They have a tug of war trying to place Mariah May's head on their heart.
Tony Khan just needs to bribe the head of DC. Right, but he has to bribe fucking, what's his name, fucking James Gunn to get fucking John Cena on an episode of Dynamite.
Taz is demanding, what the hell is going on? I don't know if I'm terrified or turned on. He doesn't know.
Taz, sometimes you gotta be both, buddy.
RJ City, guest this week was Mina Shirakawa.
It understands. RJ City is terrified and aroused at the same time every day of his life.
And this is by far, if you guys haven't seen this AEW this week, they talk about boobs a lot. So have fun with that. In the learning tree.
Like in the first 5 minutes, he asked her about her tits.
They approached Private Party backstage, said, hey, they should change their name to Public Party. Open their party to more people. Brian Key said.
I'm then. Jericho says something so fucking cringe, man. Like.
It hurts. But it's fucking goofy at the same time. It works. They're disrespecting Jericho. Next week, they're inviting Private Party to TV time with I am the Learning Tree. I don't know how long I'll keep doing that, but
I'm going to record you said it with a saying it so you don't actually have to physically say it every time.
Well, Jericho does not exist until this gimmick's gone, so.
He's a Learning Tree.
This is huge. This was huge here. In our final backstage segment of the night, Bryan Danielson is putting over Wheeler Yuta.
Yes.
He said he came out for the match for this team and he couldn't be more prouder. Danielson said 8 months ago, he said this was his final year as a full-time wrestler. And to be honest, it hasn't been what he's wanted. He lost to Cage, lost the finals of the Continental Classic, lost to Okada in Tokyo Dome. Every big match he loses. Charlotte broke the camel's back, was losing Anarchy in the arena. His career isn't over yet, so when Tony Khan announced the Owen Hart Tournament winner gets an AEW World title shot at All In, this could be his last shot. And if he's going out, he's going out on top. Well, there you have it.
There's your Owen Cup. Here's your Owen Cup winner, folks.
Swerve Hello. Strickland, Bryan Danielson, AEW All In, you crown him world champion. It's time. Let him get the last one.
What about Nigel?
That might just happen when they're both non-full-time wrestlers. I really hope that they pitch to him, let's have you win it at All In, and you can put the next guy over at Wrestle Dream in your hometown. That can be your final match. Let him get a quick 2-month title reign. I'm all in. Fuck it. I want this now.
I mean, I would love for him to get the shot. I actually still wonder if he's ever going to win the title. I mean, a lot of people will say he needs to. I don't know if he necessarily agrees with that himself.
I don't think he needs to, but I really want more legacy on this title. And we tried doing it with Punk. MJF didn't even mention Punk this Dynamite when he very well should have. He mentioned all the former AEW World Champions. He mentioned he beat them all. He should have mentioned CM Punk. He didn't. This is the first name we're scraping from AEW's history books. And it
has
sucks.
To be done. It has to
it
be
really
done.
It really sucks.
It has to be done, though. We cannot have that baggage following AEW around for the next 30 years.
At least for the time being.
I think especially if CM Punk goes on to have an incredible run in WWE, it's going to make it look even worse, and you just have to let it go.
It really might, but he didn't mention CM Punk, and I think that now that they've been told, like, we might get CM Punk mentioned in Chicago to get heat on someone, but that's about it. So, I have no problem with adding legacy to this title. Swerve Strickland has barely entered his prime. Let me get his age just so I can confirm this, but I believe he's like...
I think the other thing that we have to consider here, Charlie, is that, like, he may win the title shot and face Swerve at Wembley and lose on the big stage, and then they run it back at WrestleDream.
Swerve might win it back at WrestleDream in both of their hometowns. This might write itself. It might.
This might be a movie that is already... This might be an AI-generated movie. It's so goddamn good. Like,
this
you
is
know?
Not something I contemplated before, but...
I'm not saying that AI... By the way, let me clarify. I'm not saying AI-generated scripts are good. I'm saying that it's so easy to fucking write that it's like an AI is writing it. That's the point that I'm making. Like,
let's jump into Rampage this week, where Penta El Sadamieto took on and defeated the Butcher. No pork chop.
How long has it been since I saw fucking Butcher, man? I feel like it was on a Ring of Honor like 3 weeks ago or something like that. Imagine if that was actually correct. I'm not checking, but imagine I actually just had that memory. That'd be crazy. But
these guys walked in. This match got off the rails pretty fast.
Yeah, they were just kind of beating the shit out of each other
a little fast.
This is kind of a bit of a fight, but you know, hey, what do you expect from Penta, you know?
And we often compliment people for being able to stick with luchadors. However, we got to stick it out. We got to point it out when people can't. Butcher couldn't hang with him here, and I think it took away from the match a little bit.
I wonder if it's because Butcher's just not getting reps, man.
I don't know what it was. He couldn't keep up with that pace, and that's very unfortunate.
Ronnie's going to lay off the fucking
Twinkies. I got to tell you something right now. This might be the last match we see of Butcher on AEW television. If it's contract mania, if he's one of the guys that we see gone,
I mean,
next,
he might be on one of those weird things where they just re-sign him to like a couple year deal, like a year ago or something like that, because his contract just randomly came up and it wasn't one of those ones that we were like gonna look at. You know what I mean? So they just sneakily re-signed him and like he didn't realize at the time that they were just locking him to be like an enhancement talent, basically. Like, honestly. This is going to sound really disrespectful to Ethan Page, but that's basically the deal Ethan Page was on. He was paid full-time money to show up every week, not get used, and essentially enhance their larger main event talents. You know what I mean? Like, so, a lot of guys like that in AEW right now, you know? Like, and I think...
Sometimes when you just see a match...
I think everybody's waiting for people to step up, and I think a lot of people are content to just make the money. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that AEW wrestlers are complacent, because they're not, but I do think there are a lot of wrestlers in the business in general that are. That they're content to just do a 9-to-5 wrestling job, even though it's not really 9-to-5, you know, like,
And we know this guy's got a gig as a guitarist in a big band. At least he did. So.
Yeah, no, that band broke up. So this is all he's got now. So if he loses his contract, he's going to have to go to TNA straight up. Like he put all his cards. That's what I think is a little disappointing for him is he kind of, I believe I could be speaking out of my ass here that it had a little bit to do with his wrestling that he was the reason why that band broke up. I don't think it was his fault, but I think like he left because of his career. And if he got like dropped after that, I mean, I think there were probably issues with that band anyway, if it broke up. Right. But like, you know, I assume working a wrestling schedule and work, I mean, we see how difficult it is for Jericho and he's, you know, only just in the last like 5 years really taken off as a musician. And this was a band that I don't know that they were super established, but you know, if you want to try and be, you have to be fucking grinding all the time as a band, you know what I mean? So yeah, I hope he doesn't lie. I like the Butcher. I think even if you just like, did they let the Blade, here's my question, is the Blade still under contract?
They're definitely signed at the same time, so I bet their contracts are the exact same, whatever it is.
Yeah, so
I do not have a good vibe for them, and guys. And who
might,
knows?
Might be a bit of a swan song here. Hopefully not, because I think they both can do stuff. It's just they've never been used. You know, they used to be a legit tag team in this company.
Learning Tree came to ringside, gave Menard some pointers, and that was pretty much it. Menard wasn't happy. Acclaim defeated Hunter Gray and Parviz. Quick little squash. Backstage to Shane Taylor Promotions, and sounds like they're calling out Top Flight and Action Andretti. That'll be a fun little match. We had my favorite of the week. Following that, We got a picture of champion vignette set for Timeless Toni Storm versus Lady Frost on Tomorrow's Collision. I thought that was pretty good. The Bang Bang Gang, Juice Robinson and Austin Gunn and Colt Gunn defeated Caleb Crush, Chris Wilde, and Tyler Payne. The story here was not the match. Jay White took the mic, talks about how much the Bang Bang Gang is back at full strength. He anointed, he knighted Juice Robinson. He called him one corner of the unified AW Trios titles, placed the belt on Robinson. He is officially a champion.
I'm 1,000% okay with they somehow finagle that Jay White is now in singles again. I'm fine with it. I'm in. He did not win those championships, but fuck it, Freebird. We ball.
Freebird. Yeah, no, Freebird.
A lot of people don't like the Freebird rule. I don't really give a fuck. Just let this, like, look, dude, it doesn't fucking matter. Yeah, did Juice win the championship? No, I don't even give a fuck. It's going to say Jay White on the title reign. Do I give a fuck? No. But you know what else it's going to say? It's going to say the Bang Bang Gang or Bull Club Gold or whatever the fuck ever. It's not going to say fucking Jay White. It'll say all four of them now because now it's confusing. And who cares? Who actually cares? This division is in the goddamn dirt anyway.
They're trying to resurrect it. They're trying. We'll give
this
them that.
Shit doesn't help, let me tell you. When we're like, fuck it, nobody, it doesn't matter. Anybody can be in your trio and be the champion. Fuck it.
That's why I had the night up. This is the way. Our main event match, Mina Shirakawa takes on and defeats Serena Deeb. I thought this had some pretty good technical flair. Mina was able to show off. Like, she is really, really good. And I don't think it's a surprise she hit the Western audiences like crack. I mean, seriously, she is so freaking good, and she has so much personality. And yeah, we played up. Mariah May hit the ring after she celebrated with Mina. Toni appeared on the
ramp. You
know
what she's hitting? She's almost hitting like that. You know that energy that Kairi Sane had when she was still doing the solo fucking pirate gimmick in NXT, and it almost kind of worked? This is like the working version of that, I feel like. Like that vibe, except minus the stupid hat, which I know was her own thing,
I'm also getting some Jamie Hayter vibes in terms of how quick she's getting over.
Ooh, that would be a fun match if we could somehow set that up after Forbidden Door. I wonder where that's another injury that I'm so devastated by because she was the fucking soul, the heart, and the fucking body of the women's division.
So just some more shenanigans are afoot with the three. Serena Deeb did very well in this match. I love Serena Deeb. This match is worth seeking out. And honestly, pretty solid Rampage. I was worried after the opening match. Because I'm a big fan of Penta matches, but even that one didn't work for me, and it was not his fault. So, moving on, we have AEW Collision. So, you're going to take the lead on that, and then we'll talk about next week's cards, including Forbidden Door. Got some additions on this show, so take the lead.
Bit of a Pyrrhic victory here to open us up. We had FTR taking on the Blackpool Combat Club, and just a great tag team match to open up the show, you know what I mean? And it's another welcome back match for Wheeler, you know. I love that they gave Wheeler these two matches right back to back on both shows.
Time limit draw for Wheeler. Talk about respect.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's the thing. So unfortunately we're not gonna be able to run this back anytime soon because of the injury, right? But the fact that they did a lot of good stuff here. So let's just talk about the match a little bit. I also put this in in my notes. Wheeler Yuta is Little Caesars right now. He's hot and ready.
Yes.
And I just thought this was a sick match. Claudio looking strong as ever. And God, Wheeler. And this is something I hadn't realized. Again, it's not that this just happens in the background while you're not paying attention, man. Wheeler has gotten so fucking good. Like, he doesn't miss a beat anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it's great. And basically, time limit draw. Brandon Cutler comes out, says, yeah, we only had 20 minutes for this match. Sorry, sucks to suck. Your 5-minute request has been denied. And then they beat the shit out of him. So, great.
Is it safe to say Wheeler Yuta is the heir to Bryan Danielson as leader?
I hope so, but I don't think that will be the case. I think probably Mox will step into that role if anybody does, you know? But also, Mox likes to say that there's really no leader. They're all four the leaders of the Blackpool Combat Club, so it probably won't be.
Okay, I'm about to totally fantasy book for a second. How great would it be if when Danielson steps down, we go like fucking Game of Thrones with
yeah,
the shit?
The fucking strongest fucking leads, yeah.
Declares himself leader. He brings in someone else to join the group. He basically like usurps his fucking throne, essentially. Turns the group heel in the process. That's how Claudio, like, maybe Claudio becomes his main guy. They kick out Moxley. Because Moxley, you know, is probably not going to want to do Combat Club the rest of his career. But I think there's a connection there with Wheeler and Claudio that goes beyond
We still have some ground to cover. We still haven't really done anything with Shooter outside of one random 5-man tag match or something, you know? So,
I think maybe that's the guy
he brings in. Maybe if Shooter's contract is up around then, right? Which we don't know if it will be or not. I think he's probably signed for a little while.
Carter, it's time. AEW should debut him in this fucking club when his time comes.
The club. Zack Sabre Jr. video package played, and they showed some footage from the previous Forbidden Door he had wrestled at, I believe. And just some Forbidden Door like video package stuff, some teases. And he was like, Orange Bollocks, we're not done in the match that they had the four-way for the international title.
Orange Bollocks!
And so, yeah, I'm not surprised that we're having this match. This was one that I think probably when we reviewed that match, I said, yep, we're having that match at some point. So I probably thought it was going to be sooner than it was, but, you know, we didn't know what Zack Sabre Jr.'s schedule was going to look like that year. So he ended up wrestling a lot of indies, so probably just didn't have the time, you know what I mean? That should be a really fucking banger of a match. Probably that honestly, last time Orange Cassidy had a singles match in Forbidden Door Start, Charlie, he stole the show. So, you know, it could happen again.
Oh, unbelievable wrestler.
So,
100%.
You know? Hey, him versus British guy on Forbidden Door in Wembley, it's a good fucking bet that it's going to be a good match. You know what I mean? Not in Wembley, on Forbidden Door, I should say. Him versus British guy on Forbidden Door. This should be a good match. He did one with Will. He should be able to replicate it. And Zack Sabre Jr. is a completely different style than Will, so it's going to be a contrast to the first match. So we go to a video backstage with Chris Statlander and Stokely backstage cutting a promo saying like, yeah, we are fucking awesome. Everyone sucks. And Chris Statlander's going in the Owen Hart Cup to prove that she's better than Willow Nightingale. So we're starting to get announcements for that. We'll have to put together the brackets. I'm sure they'll show them to us and we'll have the graphic to work off of once they get all the numbers or all the entrants. But the first two we get in the women's side, at least, as far as I know, are Chris Statlander and up as we come back from commercial, Willow Nightingale also enters the cup after she's asked, like, hey, Chris Statlander's in. What do you think? And she's like, yeah, well, great, because I'm in there too. Fuck you, bitch. You know? All right. And in a match that honestly could have gone either way, I'm really curious to see what you thought about this one, Charlie. We had Dustin Rhodes taking on Johnny TV. I'm going to say that I think not every match has been amazing, but I think we should give Johnny TV some credit here because he wasn't really used at first and he was kind of patient, you know, and now he's kind of like at a semi-consistent spot on TV for it, you know what I mean? For just doing the work.
Yeah.
And I thought this match was pretty solid. We had the denarding of Johnny TV. The amount of times this man has been kicked in the balls in the last few months. Yeah. Is he trying to give himself like a manual vasectomy? Like, my God.
He doesn't want kids. That's what we've learned.
I get it. And at one point, Taya puts the foot on the rope, gets ejected. And then Johnny TV gets defeated by Dustin Rhodes, who then goes on to cut like what feels like, again, he was thinking about retiring. But he's like, never mind. I'll call out Jack Perry instead. So we're getting Jack Perry versus Dustin Rhodes. And is that going to be to qualify for the TNT title match? Am I tweaking?
Yes, okay. That is for the TNT title match.
Okay, so Dustin's losing, but Jack will probably get a really, really good match out of him, I would think. Or probably the other way around, realistically, but you know what I mean. So that's what I was talking about earlier. We got some great entrance music for the premier athletes here that I really, really hope they use going forward because it's awesome. They killed a couple of people. It's like a trio squash here. Good stuff. Scorpio Sky still trying to form a cult. Tony Storm took on Lady Frost. Expected a decent match here, and I think it delivered. Frost is just super good, athletic. It's a thumbs up for me, man. Like, you know, and then right after, Tony Storm is like, hey, Mariah, you know, I see all the stuff going on with Mina lately. It's cool and all, but like, you know, you're mine. I want you to be mine. I want you to understand that I appreciate you. So I'm entering you with my power as the AEW Women's Champion. I am putting you in the Women's Owen Hart Cup, which is some serious development there. First of all, great that she's in the cup. It's going to make the cup even better. She might be your fucking winner, honestly. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Setting that up for Forbidden Daniels Door, dude. Forbidden Door, for Wembley, I mean. A couple of Brits
talk
battling.
Talk about money. Are you kidding me? Talk about money.
100%. You know what I mean? And I think that's great because it also backfires on her. And if she does decide to team with Mina or something like that and turn on Tony, then it writes itself, you know? So that's great stuff there. And I like that it's kind of some development for that relationship there too. Shibata was working the camera backstage for Hook and Joe, who assaulted the premier athletes backstage and beat the shit of them. This was like some WWE shit. They just, a couple of dudes went backstage and just said, hey, watch this, and beat the shit out of a couple of guys. So I hope this leads to some kind of like TV, you know, feud between the two groups, because it could set them both up for success. And Joe and Hook looking like some fucking... You had some stuff you wanted to say about this, so go ahead and hit me with it really quickly, because you really enjoyed this one. This was almost your favorite this week, so go ahead and hit me with it.
Yeah, I thought this formation of this new Samoa Joe kind of group here, so he's officially adding Samoa Joe, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata is one of our new groups in AEW. And as a firm believer of factions and stables, you name it, to me, it just elevates the programming. Usually when you have stuff to fall back on like this, you could hear his Google Translator. Dude, this was really, really well executed. They were cracking jokes as they're beating the holy piss out of the premier athletes.
No crying in wrestling.
I saw someone kind of compare it to a Pulp Fiction-esque beatdown in kind of the gimmick of these characters and how they're chattering in between their punches. And I'm all in. Seriously. I think this... We've been wondering, you know, what's Samoa Joe going to do as champion? You want to talk about pairing up Hook with a couple of legends? Count me the fuck in. Hey, how do you feel about this trio getting a little time to cook? And then let's do them for the Bang Bang Gang, huh?
Maybe it'd be a lit match. This is a group of killers right here.
Babyface stable. We need more of them. That's not the acclaimed.
100%. And Joe needs a babyface run. He was the bad guy, but sort of the good guy for a while. And like it was sort of in between. I like him being back on the good side for a little bit, because then when he turns on us again, it's going to feel so earned.
Doesn't this feel organic forming with three guys you never put together?
I think Joe knew this when he was coming off the title and him dropping the title at the right time to the Swerve is what made him a babyface, 1,000%. You know what I mean? Everybody knows that. And it's not like we aren't aware of this. We are all really happy with Joe right now because we all know he made the right – it's not his choice, but he took it with grace, and he had a really great title reign, way better than I think a lot of people thought it was going to be after the great title reigns we had just come off of. Not anything against Joe. It's just Joe has never really had that opportunity anywhere besides TNA, and I think a lot of people were skeptical because they hadn't seen it because the WWE never pulled that trigger. Like, the most infamous one is him versus, was it Brock at SummerSlam, where they had the fucking banger of a match, but it just didn't win, you know, like.
And that's why when we mentioned adding legacy to the title, Samoa Joe's title run adds legacy to it.
100%. Speaking of somebody that needs to fucking add legacy, Charlie, Daniel Garcia. Took on Tate Mayfairs here, who I guess is somebody I hadn't really heard of, but he's
I've never heard of Tate Mayfairs.
Yeah, hey, bring in more guys like this, I'm fine, you know what I mean? You know, some of them will get opportunities, some of them will not, you know, like to continue to do stuff, and he seemed pretty solid, so. He was wearing the trunks here, which is my biggest takeaway. He was ratcheting up the aggression, which is my second biggest takeaway, and I just thought it was good stuff here. We get a little video package for, I believe it's Zooksies is how it's pronounced, correct? The tag partner of Stephanie Vaquer in Stardom. I believe it's Zooksies.
CMLL, yes. I've never seen her work before.
I have not either, but I'm sure because she's tagged up with Vaquer, she's probably pretty solid. She's got the mask thing going on, so that should be interesting, you know what I mean? We got our match announcements on the show for Dynamite, and I think there might have been some stuff for maybe... No, I think it was just Dynamite stuff. Orange Cassidy was backstage, and they were like, bro, everything's going to shit. What the hell? He's like, yeah, I mean, it's not really great right now. I'll be honest with you. I forget what the whole point of this segment was. Does someone walk up to him? I cannot remember for the life of me.
Yeah, Orange Cassidy's just been pretty upset.
No, yeah, he was just mad because, like,
Saber came up to him.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Saber was there. Am I tweaking?
He was knocking on the door.
Oh,
surprised me to come have a match. Maybe he filmed something for Ring of Honor.
Yeah, no, he probably did. He probably did a Ring of Honor match. Actually, you're probably right. Okay, I tweaking out at this point in this show because it was like fucking 2 in the morning, and I'd just been watching wrestling for like 4 hours. So
fully tweaked. Yeah, I just watched it.
I would have popped, honestly. I didn't remember. Okay, Zack Sabre Jr. was there. I knew there was a reason why I wrote this down. I just couldn't remember. And then we talked about the main event already. Fucking banger. I thought it was a solid week of AEW this week. The only thing that really kind of didn't hit was Ring of Honor, but it hasn't really hit in a while. So it hit more than it had. So, you know, it's better than what you could have hoped for, I suppose, you know. But yeah, Charlie.
We're staying in Iowa. We were in Iowa for Collision.
Yeah, I did think there were some shows where the crowd was quieter. I did notice that in some of the matches. It wasn't like noticeable, but like I did know. I was like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know.
Smaller crowd, but I feel like they have loud voices. Does that make sense?
I think sometimes being in a smaller arena can help that. Like, if it's a smaller arena, but there's enough of a space to echo it, I think it can sound bigger than it actually is. I think that's how the half-filled stadiums sometimes sound like a full stadium in those stadium shows, because the, you know, the design of an amphitheater, you know what I mean? I don't know, but either way.
So our upcoming Dynamite this week, the 12th, AEW International Champion Will Ospreay defends against Rey Fénix. TBS Champion Mercedes Moné defends against Zosi. Zosis. It's sis is the last word. So let's go with Zosis. Mark Briscoe, Orange Cassidy, and Kyle O'Reilly versus Kyle Fletcher.
It might be Zosis. Nah, I don't fucking know.
It's sis. That sounds right. I just know it ends with sis. So that match looks pretty good. TV time with Chris Jericho featuring Private Party. TNT title qualifying match, Dustin Rhodes versus Jack Perry. Will be in action. That's it for Dynamite-O. The 1 year anniversary of AEW Collision this Saturday. We have a Christian Cage Father's Day special.
That's going to be a lit segment. That might be a promo segment of the year right there, honestly.
TNT Championship qualifying match. Lee Moriarty versus Dante Martin.
When banners collide, how will the foundation of AEW be cracked forever?
House of Black returns, and no DQ, Deonna Purrazzo versus Thunder Rosa.
That's going to be insane. Sorry.
That's going to be really...
They're going to murder
each other.
That's
your main event, right? That's your main event.
I hope so. It better. Tony Khan booking.
Forbidden Door. We're looking up and up. We've had some more announcements on Twitter. So, AEW World Championship match, Swerve Strickland versus Will Ospreay. 10 out of 10.
Of course.
The ladder match for the vacant TNT Championship. So far, we got Takeshita versus Mark Briscoe. Title for title, TBS Champion Mercedes Moné versus New Japan Strong Women's Champion Stephanie Vaquer. AEW Women's Championship, Tony Storm defends against Mina Shirakawa from Stardom. IWGP World Heavyweight Championship, Jon Moxley versus Tetsuya Naito. And then Zack Sabre Jr. versus Orange Cassidy.
Okay, so they're just running Naito back at the pay-per-view. I thought that was what they were going to do, but I wasn't sure because, you know, they could have taken it off Moxley off of, you know. I think there was part of us that was like, no, they're probably putting this on Evil, but they didn't do that, so, you know.
Yeah, and that's about it. I was trying to think of if anything came out from, what's it called, Dominion this week. I didn't remember hearing anything too crazy from it.
Yeah.
Let's do a quick scan, but yeah, I mean, Naito defeated Newman. TMDK defeated the Bullet Club War Dogs.
That's pretty big for TMDK. War Dogs have been kind of dominant lately, you know what I mean?
Jeff Cobb is still New Japan World Television Champion, so he is going to... He announced on one of their posts, their little backstage interviews, he's challenging someone from AEW, so I'm sure he'll be on the pay-per-view. They announced the G1 Climax format this year. Two blocks. Thank God we're back to two. Just 10-man blocks. Let me clarify. Two 10-man blocks. No more 34 fucking people. It muddies it down.
Get Brian in there.
That'd be so cool. A tournament will be held to determine the 10th man in each block. So we might get some cool names in there. TMDK. Mikey Nichols and Shane Haste are now IWGP Tag Team Champions. Shingo Takagi versus Hanare goes to a draw. Sounds like that match was really cool. Jon Moxley defeats Evil. And El Desperado is crowned the Best of the Super Juniors champion. So good for him. He's finally won it.
Let's go, Despy.
Desperado challenges Sho for their junior heavyweight championship. Jesus. I was blanking on the word junior there. that's it for us, guys.
Wow, shout out show. I didn't realize show was champion. Shout out show.
Yeah, shout out show. House of Torture doing some cool things. They thought they might get all the gold, but look, you either love House of Torture or you hate it. Shout out Jack Perry for House of Torture. Thanks, everyone, for sticking around with us this week. Again, if you are interested at all in the other podcast, Eat Sleep Elite Fantasy, go ahead and search it up. Hit follow, and it'll pop in your feed when it's on there this week, no matter what platform you're on. So we really appreciate that. We got the Acolyte premiere, or episode 3 coming out Wednesday. We got The Boys, I think it's Friday, and House of the Dragon Monday. So we will hopefully see you guys there. And again, we're back to wrestling next week, Tuesday or Wednesday, wherever you guys are at. Wardlow wasn't on the show, but he'll take us home. Thanks again. Wardlow, you know what to do.